You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
To the right side, play action fake to Brown, Moule on a roll, downfield wide open, it's the record for G. Roy Simon. He has caught Milt, and Simon says he's the all-time CFL pass receiving leader. At the four-yard line, 4 yards separating McManus and the Lions from a trip to the Grey Cup. Doesn't get better than this. McManus, end zone, touchdown Lions! BC's going to the Grey Cup!
What's going on, CFL fans? Welcome to episode 133 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you by Metal Rocks, your source for custom-made artisan jewelry. Check out our website for a link to their site. I'm your host, Brian Walrishnan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show. It's week one of the 2019 CFL season, and as we record this, we already have one game in the books. The Saskatchewan Roughriders dropping their season opener to the Ticats in Hamilton, which, of course, is a good result for the Lions. The Lions will kick things off this Saturday night at BC Place Stadium, unveiling their new-look team against West Division rival Winnipeg. There's no doubt the Lions have added some nice pieces to this year's roster, starting at the top with quarterback Mike Riley. But there are also some questions heading into this season, mainly with the front seven of the defense and on special teams, where the kicking game is still a concern for the Leos. We'll preview the game this weekend and also get the scoop from the Winnipeg side of things with John Hodge, host of the Blue Bomber Talk podcast. Let's bring in Mojo Kemp now and get things started. Mojo, welcome back following your week off. Before we get started, you took our last show off to go see the Godzilla movie. How did you enjoy it?
Hey, everybody. Hey, Brian. Man, it was an awesome, awesome movie. I love Godzilla. Folks, I've been watching Godzilla movies since about 1971, 1972. Mom used to make me go to bed early, Brian, like six in the evening. And she'd wake me up at about 11 o'clock for a Godzilla movie. She'd make me toasted peanut butter and jam sandwiches, and me and Mom would watch Godzilla movies. Fast forward to 2013. Unfortunately, that was the year my mom passed away. While she was in the hospital, I'd go visit her at night. I bought all the old classic Godzilla movies so that me and Ma could watch them again in the hospital. And this is how much Godzilla means to me, folks. I wouldn't miss a podcast just for any other movie. As you guys know, I had cancer last year. And when you're going through cancer, you need positive reinforcement, positive visualizations to get you through. When I was in the radiation machine, I would visualize Godzilla with his radiation breath blasting away at my tumor. And remember, there were a couple moments last year I didn't know I'd be here to watch this new movie. So this was how much that movie meant to me. And thanks, Travis, for stepping in for me. Actually, I heard last week's show, Brian, was the best I've ever sounded on the show.
Yeah, Travis did a great job, and it was good to have him fill in for you. We had to take last week off because of work commitments that I had. So, and actually, this podcast was delayed as well because I came home last night and our power was out, and it didn't come back on until 2 a.m. in the morning. So we're going to thank John Hodge for rescheduling with us tonight. We'll hear from him a little bit later. Are you the kind of person that will go back to a movie two or three times, Mojo?
No, not generally, Brian. I mean, with the cost of today's movies, as we just discussed before we went to show here, obviously I went to the VIP theater, $25 a pop. So, no, I'll see it once on the big theater. I'll get the DVD the day it comes out. I'll rewatch it then. And, you know, the original Godzilla movie, I've probably seen 100 times. So, sort of, I will watch it again, obviously, but I'm not going to go to the theater to watch it again. Although, I could be talked into it if you wanted to go.
Yeah, I know some guys that are, like, right into Star Wars and stuff like that. They go to the theater, like, 6 times within the span of 3 weeks to see the movie over and over and over again. I just don't get it, but to each their own, I guess. And I mean, I watch all sorts of football, so some people probably think that's weird too.
I go home from a Lions game and I immediately watch the recording of the TSN broadcast of the Lions game.
Yeah.
Although I have to kind of admit I am actually looking for myself.
See how many times you made it on TSN.
That's a thing with me. That's a thing with section 210.
Yeah, I do the same thing, and half the time I wake up on the couch doing the head bob and the game's over. But to each their own, and I'm glad you enjoyed the movie. It's good to have you back. As I mentioned, we were supposed to record this show last night, but our studio was without power all night. But it was kind of a blessing since it gave us a few more things to talk about. And off the top, I want to talk about the hit on Zach Collaros last night by Simone Lawrence of the Ticats. The Riders QB just lasted 3 plays before incurring what appears to be another concussion. That hit was garbage mojo, and Lawrence tried to apologize after the game for his actions. But this is exactly the kind of thing the league needs to get out of the game. With all the talk of head injuries and whatnot in football, he'll be facing a hearing according to today's reports, but if there's no suspension, I really question the CFL's commitment to player safety. There needs to be an example set here. Lawrence has done this kind of thing before, and there's no place for a hit like that in our game. And let's all hope that Zach Collaros is okay and takes a little time as well to consider his future after football, because I think this is his 4th or 5th concussion now, and in the end, you just want the guy to have a good life.
Yeah, I mean, that was a super cheap shot. You know, the guy was clearly sliding.
Oh, yeah.
It was clearly a headshot. And the CFL's big thing is, oh, it's a 25-yard penalty. That's the big penalty now. That's garbage, right? Garbage. The guy should have been out of the game. And, you know, Brian, I saw where some people were saying, you know, it's not the CFL, really. It's the CFL Players Association that needs to crack down on its own members. Because, they're protecting the wrong guy.
Well, and we know what's going to happen, right? There's maybe a suspension leveled. The CFLPA will appeal that suspension on behalf of the player. And, you know, it's going to get delayed. Simone Lawrence will probably play another 2 or 3 weeks by the time there's an appeal hearing. You make a good point. I mean, the CFL has to stop protecting guys like this. And, you know, over the last 24 hours, we've seen a lot of players came out and said that, we have to get hits like this out of the game. Well, then take your punishment, guys, and learn your lessons, because this stuff keeps happening. And, you know, there has to be an example set here. If the CFL is really serious about player safety, it's time that somebody be made an example of here. And I think Simone Lawrence is a good candidate, because he's done this kind of thing before as well. So let's hope Zach Collaros is okay. There's no place for hits like that in our game. And like I said, all we want is for Zach Collaros to have a life after football. And I think he needs to sit down and think about that, because, you know, as I said in our last few shows, I've been picking the Riders to finish last because I just didn't have confidence that Zach Collaros was going to finish the year. And it only took 3 plays for that to come true. So unfortunately for him and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, they lost their starting quarterback, and we'll see where they go from here, but hopefully Zach will be all right.
Did you happen to catch Jerron Carter's tweet today?
Yeah.
Jerron Carter, for those of you who don't follow Jerron Carter, he said, basically, I'm going to paraphrase, but what he said was, if someone hits Mike Riley like that, it's probably going to be Jerron Carter's last day in Canada.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Sticking up for his quarterback. So let's hope we don't see that with Mike Riley, because the Lions will be kind of screwed if he goes down as well, but all the best at Zach Collaros. Did you get a chance to watch any of the preseason game, Mojo?
I did, Brian. I went to the preseason game. I don't, you know, it's 50-50 whether I go to the preseason game, but my lovely wife and I took her youngest son, who just turned, it was his 25th birthday, to let you guys know how old I am. And, It was, you know, it was for a preseason game, Brian. It was pretty fun. I have to admit, I don't usually stay for an entire preseason game. And at halftime, when it was 30-16, it was like I was looking at that exit going, well, you know, it's just a preseason game. But would I leave my team? No. I will not leave my team, like unlike some podcasters who left the game early. And man, it was a great comeback, it turned out, by the Lions.
Yeah, I rarely ever leave games early, but it was the preseason and I was tired. And I was with a couple other people that had a baby that at their grandparents' place that they wanted to get to. So decided to leave a little bit early. And as soon as we got outside, we heard the roar of the crowd. So we knew that we missed something special. But, you know, I saw the ending, taped the game, watched it again. But, yeah, a great performance by the Lions, especially their second team guys that went in the second half there and got the job done against a Stampeder team that didn't have all their starters. But Bradley was effective, leading the Lions to 2 touchdowns on his 3 drives in the first quarter. The story of the night was QB Grant Kramer, who led the Lions to the win in the fourth quarter of the game with 2 TD drives of his own. Kramer arrived with the Lions a week into camp and impressed enough to earn himself a practice roster spot on the team. Many people drew parallels to the way Mike Riley started his career in the CFL with a similar performance in 2011 when Riley felt he was going to get cut by Wally Buono. So that's a nice side story and nice to see a guy come in and make the most of his opportunity.
Yeah, and you could tell after the, you know, they had some shots of him up on the big screen.
Oh, yeah, he was just grinning from ear to ear.
Yeah, it was really nice to see. You know, it cost somebody else a job, but that's professional sports. I mean, the one quarterback that ended up getting cut, I know we're going to get into it a little bit later, but he had 2 quarters to show what he had, and you know, he had some drops that aren't his fault, of course.
Had an interception, too, that was kind of ugly.
But, you know, when you get in there, you got to perform, especially when you're fighting for a job. So it's good to see young Cosmo Kramer earn himself a practice roster spot. And, Brian, I think we'll be seeing him again. I didn't know Ricky Lloyd was hurt. And, you know, a lot of us were wondering, why wasn't he playing? So, you know, hopefully he comes back as well. And just from watching last night's the Hamilton-Saskatchewan game, Brian, you got to wonder about the Lions only going in with 2 quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's a big question. I was asked about that last week on Twitter, and my answer was, well, how often do you see the third quarterback come into a game? And, of course, the first game of the season this year, the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
100% of the time so far.
Yeah. Saskatchewan Roughriders have to go to their third QB last night. So, but it is a fairly rare occurrence. And I think, you know, it allows you to pay some other guys a little more and perhaps dress somebody who's actually going to play and contribute to the game versus somebody who's just going to stand on the sideline and hold a clipboard. So I think in this case, the Lions are going to have to identify an emergency quarterback. I have no idea who that would be at this point, but, you know, let's hope it doesn't come to that. But, yeah, the Lions are going to only dress QBs and or 2 QBs, and that's been confirmed with their depth chart that came out today. So it's an interesting philosophy, and a lot of NFL teams only dress 2 QBs as well. So that's the way the Lions are going this year. Defensively, I think there's still some questions. The Lions didn't generate a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and there were some breakdowns in the secondary with the starters in the game. So I'm not sure the Lions have found that stud defensive end they were looking for or whether the linebacker player is what they want, but it's a work in progress, and I'm sure we'll see more tinkering over the first few weeks of the season here.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you're saying there. Obviously, I think what's going to happen is, especially early on, that the Lions are going to have to outscore their opponents, Brian, in the early part of the season. And hopefully they can find a diamond in the rough for the defense.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but sitting in the stands for the first time in probably 3 years, every time our offense was on the field with Mike Riley, I thought we could score. And that was a great feeling to have because, like I said, I haven't had it in a few years with Travis Lule and Jonathan Jennings and all the injuries and things like that have been going on with our offense. So I just felt confident with Mike Riley out there. And if I feel confident as a fan, I wonder how those players feel. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They got to be pretty happy. I mean, the receivers got to be tickled pink, Brian. And I think... Man, I really like I'm sure we're going to get into it, but I really like our receiving core this year.
Yeah, they're looking good, and they added another another player with some potential who we'll get into in a sec here. Sergio Castillo will start the season as the Lions kicker and punter. He missed a couple of convert attempts, so we'll have to keep an eye on the kicking situation and whether or not the Lions look to bring any more competition in. Or if Castillo can get more consistent. He was a late arrival to camp, so hopefully he can find his rhythm starting this week against the Bombers.
Always scary to see your kicker miss those converts. And he missed a couple converts, right? And it came down to it at the end of the game there, Brian. A two-point game, all of a sudden, you know, the Lions of old would give up enough yards for a guy to kick a field goal to lose the game. So those extra points, and I know it was only a preseason game, but those extra points are really important.
Yeah, and we knew it was going to be a challenge to find a kicker, and you know, we're just going to have to cross our fingers and hope that Castillo can do it. He's done it in the league before, so you know, hopefully it's just a matter of him getting a few more reps this week in practice and ironing out the problems that he had. So here we are in week one of the CFL season, and the Lions have already benefited by a Eastern team defeating a West team, with the Ticats defeating the Riders last night. It's worth noting as well for Lions fans that there was no Manny Arsenault or Solomon Elamimian for the Riders. I think they mentioned on the broadcast last night that Solomon's going to be out till around Labor Day. So they're describing it as a calf injury, but I'm wondering if that Achilles has flared up again because... you know, that's all linked together with the calf and the Achilles. Just wondering how healthy Solomon is if he's not going to be back till Labor Day.
Yeah, you know, it's making, I mean, we're Lions fans. We love Solly. Let's just get that out of the way. But it's really making Ed Hervey look good right now, man. And I guess it's a good thing that Solly didn't injure himself in Toronto, where they would have booed him. Or they would have cheered him for getting injured, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we all knew Manny Arsenault wasn't going to play. He's still, you know, coming fresh off that knee injury and near the end of his rehab. So probably be a few more weeks before he makes his Riders debut as well. And interesting to see who's going to be throwing them the ball after last night. But those are two players that a lot of Lions fans were upset about losing. And so far, it looks like a good choice not to re-sign. Well, not to re-sign Manny, but to release Solomon. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on those two players in the future. Lions draw a tough opening night opponent in the Blue Bombers, who many are considering the favorite in the West this season. For the Lions, it's the first time we'll get to see the full lineup and an unrestricted package for this reconstructed team. The team made its final cuts following last week's preseason game, and I've highlighted a few names of note here. The team released quarterback Austin Apodaca, and that was purely based on the performance of Grant Kramer, I am sure. Apodaca didn't really do himself any favors, didn't have that great of a night, threw an interception, didn't really move the offense that well, so not really a surprise there. Kicker punter Anthony Alex lost out to Sergio Castillo. Wide receiver Shakir Ryan, who had that 63-yard punt return and who we were talking about, maybe the Lions had found themselves a new kick returner. Shows you how much we know because he was released as well. Julian Laurent, that was a surprise to me. This is a guy that was drafted last year by the BC Lions and had a lot of promise, but I guess he never progressed, or Ed Hervey thought he could find something better because he was released as well. Defensive back Keon Lynn, who had some CFL experience, was auditioning at the safety spot. Once the Lions signed Anthony Thompson, I think his days were done. He certainly didn't have a great camp as well. Linebacker Stephon Hurd was with the Lions for the last couple of seasons. He's gone. He also signed a new receiver with some hometown roots. Rashawn Simonese was cut by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is a player that has a lot of upside mojo, but he's had a bumpy road as well. He was ruled academically ineligible for the 2016 Canadian University season after having a great season in 2015. He also had a positive drug test for performance-enhancing drugs after being among the final cuts of the NFL's Cincinnati Bengals. But this is a guy that's got some good size, 6'4", 200 pounds, and a ton of potential. Not sure what the issues are there. I'm going to ask John Hodge when we get him on here what the issues were with the Bombers. I think he was offered a practice roster spot with the Bombers and refused, so they released him and the Lions snapped him right up. So he's a local kid, was born in Vancouver, so hopefully he finds his groove here with the BC Lions.
Yeah, Brian, and we mentioned, no surprise about Abadaka. Didn't really show up too much. You got to wonder if Anthony Alix do they have him on speed dial after
I doubt it.
After Castillo missing those extra points. I was a little surprised to see Joey Augustine go. He had some catches there at the end of the game. I think he had a drop early as well, but I was a little surprised that they let him go. And like you mentioned, Julian Laurent, they gave him up pretty quick. But they got to make some room for all those ex-Eskimo guys, right?
Yeah, and they signed another guy off the Eskimos practice roster this week, plucking 2017 second round 14th overall pick Jean-Simon Waugh from the practice roster of the Eskimos. The 6'3", 295-pound Waugh came from the offensive line factory of Laval. He's appeared in three games for the Eskimos in the last 2 years. That's a nice national depth addition along the offensive line, and I think he can play some center too. So the Lions are still looking for a solution at center. Hunter Stewart's going to start there this week, but they've given themselves another option by adding Waugh.
Yeah, I noticed there was a few low snaps last week. As I spent almost 20 years playing touch football, and I was the center, so I noticed the centers play a little bit more than maybe folks would. And I think, man, I could snap better than that. But we just need to talk to Angus Reid about how important the center is.
So on to game one we go, and the Lions draw a West rival right off the bat as Adam Big Hill, Andrew Harris, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers head into BC Place. Many pundits see Winnipeg as an early favorite in what will be a very tough West division. We've said this for the last few years, but how critical is it for this new look Lions team to raise some eyebrows on opening night at home? Their next three games are on the road, and two of those games are against Edmonton and Calgary, respectively, before they head east to go take on the Argos. Making a good impression against the Bombers is going to go a long way to determining what the crowd will be like when they finally return home on July 11th.
Home openers, Brian, are always, always important, especially here in Vancouver. I was mentioning to you before we got on the show, I turned on sports radio while I was on my lunch break today, and both sports channels are talking about the Vancouver Canucks.
Oh, I'm so sick of it.
So super important for the Lions to have a good start, especially when they only get the one game in June and they're on the road again. So if anybody's going to be able to ignite the local crowd around here, it's going to be Mike Riley. It's going to be Daron Carter, Brian Burnham. All these guys are super exciting players, man. And if these guys can't do it, Brian, if they can't do it, then
we got a real problem.
I don't know, man. I don't know who's going
to
do it.
No, we got a real problem. It's critical, man. The Lions have to come out and put on a show here. They're going to be away from home, from BC Place, for almost a full month after this. If they get blown out by the Bombers for some reason, it could be ugly when they come home on July 11th. Everybody's going to forget about them. Like you said, the radio stations around here don't give them the time of day. The newspapers don't give them time of day. I opened the paper up the other day, and there was one CFL article buried about 8 pages deep in the sports section, and it was about the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
I didn't know people were still reading the newspaper.
Well, it's bad, and I don't know. And, the other day I'm listening to Sportsnet 650 on the way to work, and they're giving the CFL crap for opening their season on the same week as the NHL Game 7 and the NBA Finals. Well, when are they supposed to start? they don't know how long these series are going to go. They got to get their season underway to get it done by November. Like, what are we just supposed to sit and decide the schedule based on those other two leagues? Like, they're saying, well, the Lions are out of sight and out of mind. Well, whose fault is that? All you guys do is talk about the Canucks and the Raptors. Like, I'm sick of it. I'm just sick. This is why we do this podcast, folks. If you want people to talk about the BC Lions, listen to our show. We're trying to put out a show here so you guys got something to listen to, because the damn media in this city don't do it for you.
No, but you know, you can kind of understand where 650 is coming from, because they're owned by Sportsnet and they don't show CFL games. It's unfathomable to me that 1040 TSN, the TSN radio show, doesn't have a regular CFL show. Because what else do they got? They don't have the Canucks. I don't know. You know, the Whitecaps are having their own issues this year as well with some of the stuff that they're going through.
Yeah, and they're in the same boat as the Lions. They don't get any coverage either, really.
And yeah. I don't get why the TSN radio show isn't all over the CFL. You know, the CFL still pulls decent numbers on TV.
Yeah, but they'll tell you, well, our callers don't want to talk about the Lions. They want to talk about the Canucks.
That's because they're force-fed the Canucks.
Exactly.
And you have, if you want to get on the radio, you know what, Brian? This is every year, every show we could get on about how the local radio does not support the CFL. So thank God, thank goodness we have CFL podcasts, and now we have them in every CFL city.
Obviously, this team is going to go as Mike Riley goes, and as we mentioned, he looked sharp in his limited action last week. He and Brian Burnham had some good chemistry. Jerron Carter had a catch for a decent gain. As I mentioned, watching Riley work, I had this sense of confidence in our offense, and I haven't had that for a long time. He's translating that into the stands. Imagine what he's translating into the huddle. If he stays healthy, I think we're going to finally see some aggressive, exciting offense in BC plays again. One name fans should watch out for is Langley Rams receiver Javon Kotoy, who impressed enough to get a start at one of the slot back positions this week. The Lions are really high on this kid. He's 6'5", 230 pounds, a physical specimen. There was a report today suggesting a Lions staffer was overheard saying to enjoy him now because he'll be in the NFL in 3 years. So I'm pretty excited to see what this kid can do.
You know, we've had some pretty good luck with these junior players, right? Folks will remember Andrew Harris was a junior player. So hopefully this guy can turn some heads, and if we only can see him for 3 years, I guess good for him. Let's, you know, again, another exciting offensive piece of the puzzle. 6'5". I mean, we got some big, big receivers.
Another impressive aspect of the offense last week was the running game with John White, Brandon Rutley, and Wayne Moore all having strong performances. I love the straight-ahead running style all of these guys have, and I think the Lions are in good shape there to start the season. Both players, Rutley and White, are on the roster this week, with Rutley listed as the starter at both running back and kick returns, so I expect to see White get mixed in at running back, especially following those kick returns. But Mojo, Wayne Moore, really impressed as well in the fourth quarter, so I think our running game's in pretty good shape.
Yeah, got to love a brutal north-south attack in the running game. You know, the dance outside guys, the dance outside on the punt returns, we saw what happened last year, didn't really work. Good to get some good smash mouth football. And of course, Brian, you know, you can't have a smash mouth football without a smash mouth offensive line.
When I first wrote the script for this podcast last night, which of course didn't happen because of our power failure, we were kind of wondering what the Lions were going to do with their offensive line, but the depth chart came out today. And they have Brett Boyko at right tackle. And I know Joel Figueroa will be on the right, of course. It looks like the Lions will go with Hunter Stewart at center, Suk Chung at right guard, and David Foucault at left guard. Foucault got quite a few reps at tackle in training camp and in the preseason, so I was surprised to see Boyko at the tackle spot on the depth chart. I don't know if that's a little gamesmanship by the Lions, but we'll see if that depth chart stays the same, or they may try and switch things up a little during the game based on how things go. But I thought the line did a pretty good job against the Stampeders. Riley was sacked once, but they'll be facing a very good defense on Saturday night that lost some players, but also added the premier rush end in the league in Willie Jefferson. So we'll get a real indication of where that offensive line is this week.
Yeah, Brian, I'm a little surprised looking at the depth chart as well. From what I heard after the preseason game was that Foucault had beat out Boyko for a starting spot. Maybe, who knows, maybe they listened to our show, heard how upset we were about the Boyko Raleigh Lambala sort of trade-off, and thought, wow, Moj is pissed off. We better get Boyko in there or else there's going to be a revolt in Section 210.
Yeah, I'm sure every morning they have a what did Moj say meeting at BC Lions headquarters.
You never know. You never know.
I was under the impression that Boyko was going to be playing guard and Foucault was going to be at the tackle spot. But regardless, this is the way the depth chart has been released, so we'll see if that's the way they line up tomorrow night. On defense, with the re-signing of Anthony Thompson, he slides into the safety spot he held last season. His re-signing is a good indication the Lions weren't satisfied with what they saw there in the preseason. Keon Lynn was cut, of course. And it's good to see the Lions were able to bring Thompson back. I like the progression he's made over the last couple of years here. TJ Lee and Aaron Grimes are going to be the leaders of this group at the halfback spot. Gary Peters and Dom Termanson will start at the corners. Termanson, I recall one play where he got burned pretty deep last week, so we'll see what happens there. But this is a group that's got three pretty solid veterans on it. Well, four if you count Gary Peters and a young guy in Dom Termanson. So we'll see how that group gels out of the gate. But there's some veteran leadership there, so hopefully it won't take too long.
Yeah, and you know, Brian, but I still think there's some question marks at linebacker. I know Herdman Reed impressed us both last year in what he could do. We still know, you know, where take Odell Willis out of the picture. Where are the sacks coming from?
Yeah, we both love ourselves some defensive football, and to me, that's one of the biggest concerns is the defensive line and the linebackers. No one took a stranglehold on that open defensive end spot, and while we talked about seeing progression from 2018 draft pick Julian Laurent, the club didn't see it and released him. Devon Coleman and Claudell Lewis should be solid in the middle of the line with Odell Willis on the right side. Matt Boson, who was given the defensive game ball last week, will get the start on the left, backed up by Mefi Kolomatangi, while Junior Luke and Darius Allen, as well as Edward Godden, will rotate in when needed. Clearly, the Lions need some better push up front. And Matt Boson is a newcomer to this line, and we'll see what he can do on Saturday night.
And we've always had some good results out of the rotation, right? We've had good play before with the defensive line rotation, so let's see who's gonna step up.
You mentioned the linebackers. According to the depth chart, we'll likely see Jordan Herdman-Reed in the middle and Chris Edwards at the nickel spot. Maliki Harris will start at the will position. Adam Konar is listed as the backup to Herdman-Reed in the middle. We'll see if there's some kind of rotation there, but I think it's going to take a few games for things to get settled there and for those guys to find a rhythm together. One thing for sure, it's going to be weird not seeing Solomon Elamimian in the middle of that linebacking core.
Weird to see him not in the linebacking core. Weird to see him not on the sidelines. Weird to see somebody else, Brian, hand out the defensive game ball at the end of the game.
Special teams were better against the Stampeders, so we won't put too much stock in the first game that had a lot of rookies in the lineup and gave a ton of yards against the Eskimos. But we don't really know what the plan is at kick returner, so that'll be something to keep an eye on this weekend. It looks like Brandon Rutley's going to get the duties to start. As we mentioned earlier, the jury is still out on Sergio Castillo and the kicking duties. One more thing I wanted to mention before we get into the Bombers with our guest John Hodge, and that's the turf at BC Place. I don't know if you noticed, Moj, but a lot of guys were slipping on it last week, and I don't know if it's a shoe selection thing or if they watered the turf down before the game to keep the rubber pellets down like they do for soccer games, but hopefully that gets sorted out because not only does it take away from the quality of the play, but it's also an injury concern with guys pulling groins and their feet slipping out from underneath them. So I don't know if you noticed that or not, but I sure did on last weekend.
I took it that our receivers were making the other guys look bad, and that's why they were falling down. But like you say, Brian, you know, we don't want nobody to get hurt, so hopefully they figure it out and everybody stays healthy out there. Obviously, nothing replaces a sweet grass field. I don't know what else to say to that.
Okay, so let's check in with the Bombers and bring in our guest this week. John Hodge writes for 3downnation.com and is the host of the Blue Bomber Talk podcast. He joins us on the line now. John, thanks for joining us and welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, boys. Anytime.
Week one is here, and a lot of the fans and media, myself included, expect the Bombers to be one of the front runners in the West this season. What are your thoughts on those expectations, and what will be the strengths and the weaknesses of this Bombers team as the season gets underway?
You know, I think it's fair that the Bombers are generally seen as being in the mix for first in the West. I personally have them finishing second. That said, I mean, this is a team that has enjoyed some success in recent years and I think has developed some really nice continuity. This is year four for essentially the same coaching staff. Mike O'Shea, head coach going into year six, Paul Appelese. This is year four, and Richie Hall, this is year five. There's not a lot of teams that through their head coach and through their coordinators have that type of continuity. Adam Bakehill, I think, has firmly entrenched himself as the leader on defense.
And you've got Matt Nichols.
Matt Nichols and Andrew Harris, I think, firmly entrenched as the leaders on offense. And so when you look at the continuity that they've enjoyed and how they've kind of, be it hosting a playoff game, winning playoff games in recent years, they've seemed to make it farther every season, including last year where they gave Calgary a pretty good run for their money in the West final for a berth in the Grey Cup. And so, I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. I think probably the biggest highlight, I would say, positively for them coming into this season is the addition of Willie Jefferson. This was a team that I think had a good defensive line last season. They've not lost any pieces from that. Same defensive line. Craig Rowe, for instance, who BC Lions fans, of course, will remember from his days in Orange, is now a backup on this team. He's going to be a rotational pass rusher with Jackson Jeffcoat and Jefferson starting at defensive end. I think you're going to see times, and especially in second and long, where the team manages to get all three guys rushing the passer at the same time. And Drake Nevis is back, and Steven Richardson is a rookie out of Minnesota that the Bombers really like. He beat out Brandon Bryant for a defensive tackle spot that Brian had locked down last year as a rookie. And so I think that's probably the biggest strength from last season. The biggest area where I would probably say the Bombers have a bit of a concern from last year is on the opposite side of the trenches. On the offensive line, the bread and butter of this team has been running the football the last few years, and in my opinion, having the best offensive line in the league. And with Matthias Gosen retiring to join the police force in Delta, BC, and Suk Jung, now a member of the BC Lions, Pat Neufeldt out to start the season, not healthy after playing a full season last year, 18 games plus two playoffs. Suddenly the Bombers have a completely new interior to that offensive line. And as much as I think the Bombers have a lot of good young talent, they've got Michael Couture, first round pick in 2016, starting at center. They've got Jeff Gray, 2017 first round pick, starting at guard. They've got Drew Desjarlais as the sixth lineman. He was their first pick this year. They got Cody Speller, 2017 undrafted guy who's really made strides beating out Desjarlais for that other guard spot. In the short term, it's inevitable that will be a position where they need to grow, because the old offensive line with, Neufeldt, Gosen, and Chung had 3-4 years together starting and building that cohesion that can only come with time. And the offensive line is now starting from scratch again. And so, again, I think the defensive line is a position of strength that this team can kind of, take advantage of and enjoy. But the offensive line is going to be a spot that I don't think will necessarily be weak, but is not going to be as strong as last season. That's simply inevitable.
Hey, John, the secondary took some hits as well, with the Bombers losing Kevin Fogg, Chris Randall, and safety Tyler Loeffler. They did add former BC Lion Winston Smells Like a Rose, who had a strong last half of the season for the Lions. How does that unit look in preseason, and what do you think of your secondary heading into Saturday?
You know, I think the secondary will be fine, largely. I know the club was really impressed with Anthony Gator down the stretch, another former Lion that's on the team. He locked down that strong side linebacker spot. Chandler Fenner, former Sam linebacker in BC, will be playing field corner, which is a bit strange because they actually played the opposite positions when they were members of the Lions. They're now playing the opposite roles in Winnipeg. On the boundary side will be Winston Rose, another former BC Lion, filling in for Chris Randall, who left that spot. At safety, it'll be Jeff Hecht, the CFL veteran. Taylor Loeffler was a guy going into free agency who said, look, I'm a three-time CFL All-Star. I deserve to get paid. And the Bombers essentially said, we agree. See you later. Because that was not a position at safety that this club is going to invest a lot of money. And so between Jeff Hecht and Derek Jones, a five-year special teams dynamo, the club was pretty satisfied with what they had at that spot and let Loeffler walk to the Montreal Alouettes in free agency. So I think for me, the positions that I'm always looking at in the secondary, I think you want to be strong at Sam linebacker and you want to be strong at boundary halfback. And between Anthony Gator and between Marcus Sales, who took over those roles last year, you have some continuity. I also really like Brandon Alexander at field halfback. The corners, I think Winston Rose will be fine. Chris Randall had some really strong games last season, also had some games where he got a little bit exposed and there was maybe some chatter that he'd lost a step. We'll see if that's the case this year with him in Ottawa now. But all in all, I think the secondary after, a transition, I don't think we'll see a huge drop-off from last season, simply because I think last season, with a guy like Sales as a rookie coming in, with Gator finding a new spot, I think there already was a fair bit of transition last year. And, I think a lot of those growing pains are through.
Offensively, newcomer Lucky Whitehead, and believe me, I have about 1,000 nicknames for him, but this is a family show, so I'll let them go. But he's turned some heads this preseason with his speed, and of course you can't teach that. Talk about his potential and also the addition of Chris Matthews, who appears to be a scratch this week because of an injury. Maybe you could confirm that for us. With Darvin Adams, Nick Dembski, and Drew Walutarski, the Bombers have a pretty impressive group for Matt Nichols to work with.
Yeah, Lucky Whitehead is a guy who played in 30 games for the Dallas Cowboys, predominantly as a return specialist. And he's a guy who, there were a few clips. Unfortunately, the game was not televised, but some clips in the return game and one 86-yard touchdown pass he caught in the preseason game against Saskatchewan and Regina. Just unbelievable speed. Probably the fastest guy on the Bombers and a guy who could give a lot of guys, if you want to talk about a guy like Brandon Banks, Frankie Williams, who we saw return a great punt return touchdown last night in the season opener, Saskatchewan versus Hamilton, a guy who would be in the conversation for fastest players in the league, I think. He's going to get the start tomorrow at receiver. I'm not convinced he's necessarily a polished pass catcher at this point. That being said, he's a guy who the defense is going to have to account for in every snap, because if he ever, especially with the waggle, because it looks like he's going to be playing in the slot, if he hits that go route and, there's no help over the top, he's going to make you pay if the quarterback can hit him, 40, 50 yards down the field. That being said, I think you would rather have Chris Matthews in that spot. Chris Matthews, a guy who was a rookie of the year with the Bombers in 2012, spent many, many years in the NFL, and last year finished the season in Calgary, helping them win a Grey Cup, ironically helping that team beat the Bombers in the West Final last year. Matthews did not participate through most of training camp due to an undisclosed injury. The CFL, I think in general, teams have, over the course of the last 5 to 10 years, erred on the side of revealing less rather than more as far as injuries are concerned. And I would go as far as to say the Bombers have been maybe the biggest example of that. For instance, Derek Jones missed almost all of last season with an injury, and the club has still never said publicly once, to my knowledge, even if it was an upper or lower body injury, publicly, that is. And so Chris Matthews and Patrick Neufeldt, two veterans who will not be in the lineup when the club makes its way to Vancouver for the week one matchup at BC Place Stadium. Obviously, you'd love to have a Matthews in the lineup, and I'd love to be able to tell you when the Bombers expect him to be back, but they're playing that extremely close to the chest. Elsewhere in the receiving corps, we'll see what Kenny Lawler does, a former seventh-round pick of the Seattle Seahawks. He'll be getting the start, along with veterans Nick Dembski, Drew Letarski, and Darvin Adams. I know the Bombers are really high on Lawler. He reminds me a lot of Adams, to be quite honest. He's about the same size. He's a bit of a lanky guy, but they love his hands. They love his route-running ability. And what a great opportunity for two CFL rookies, Lawler and Whitehead, to get into the game and try to make an impact early because, you know, we've seen lots of guys with a lot of hype over the years on different teams come out of the preseason. Everyone says, wow, this guy is going to be the next, you know, big thing. Yeah. And the lights come on in the regular season and nothing happens. So it's up to those guys to make the most of it. Lawler was extremely effective in the Bombers' first preseason game at Investors Group Field in Winnipeg against the Eskimos, and he did nothing, basically, in Regina. He had one catch there in the second one. So, you know, for his sake, I'd love to see him pop off the page in Vancouver, but we'll have to wait and see. Great opportunity. Up to him to make the most of it.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned the Bombers and their injury policy, because one of my favorite things to do during the season is watch Mike O'Shea's press conferences. He's always so stone-faced, and if he gets a dumb question, he kind of calls the people out on it, and it's pretty funny stuff to watch. That brings us to Matt Nichols, who hasn't been able to seal the deal in the playoffs with the Bombers. He's been booed by fans in Winnipeg the last couple of times, or last couple of years, despite putting up good numbers overall. Is this the year he can finally silence the critics and lose that label of the guy that can't get it done when it counts?
I mean, I think a lot of Matt Nichols' struggles last season came back to the knee injury that he suffered in training camp. I don't believe he ever played fully healthy last season. And I think from what we saw in the preseason, he didn't play in the first game in Winnipeg. He played in Regina, looked okay. I know he's talked about dropping some pounds. He's, I believe, in better shape than he has been in quite some time. Or at least he would say that. That being said, I think what you said is accurate. At the end of the day, there are a lot of Bomber fans, not the overwhelming majority, but they want to see Matt Nichols lead this team to the next level, and that is to a Grey Cup. And I'm not sure it's fair to say before the season even starts that, you know, a guy is a failure if he doesn't win the team a Grey Cup, but patience is running low in Winnipeg. It has been for quite some time. And a guy like Chris Streveler, who I think really captured the imagination of fans last season, you know, being a pending free agent at the end of this year, all of a sudden you have a bit of a break in the road. You know, you can follow one of two paths. You can go into 2020, giving Matt Nichols another year, paying him big dollars, or you can say, look, we can get Chris Streveler to be our starter. Not pay him the $450,000, $500,000 it's going to take to keep him at Nichols, but we can pay him, you know, half that on a 1 or 2 year deal and turn the reins over to him. And so this is, I think, a great opportunity potentially for Matt Nichols to silence the critics and take that next step, lead this team to greater success in the playoffs. And he appears to be in the best shape and health that he's been in certainly 12 months, if not more. And so, again, for his sake, you'd love to see it happen, especially with the contract situation with a young Chris Streveler, a guy who, frankly, did not have a good preseason, but certainly last year when given an opportunity, showed well. And so, because if Matt Nichols, for instance, comes out and plays poorly this year, I'm not sure why you bring him back for 2020. If you could choose to instead invest in Chris Streveler and Sean McGuire, the third quarterback the Bombers have at the moment, who beat up Brian Bennett for that spot after Bennett was, in my opinion, the best quarterback the Bombers had in the entire preseason, who looked really sharp. So certainly a big year, maybe even make or break for Matt Nichols in Winnipeg.
You kind of answered my next question, and we were going to lead into Chris Strebler. He's a tough-as-nails guy, and he's a threat to run with the ball because of that, but his passing game wasn't all that great last year. Are you saying you haven't seen any improvements in that aspect of his game in a short preseason showing so far?
Well, he didn't throw the ball in Regina. In the first game I was there, I was in the press box in Winnipeg, and he completed 2 of 6 pass attempts for, I want to say it was 14 yards. And for a guy like Chris Strebler, everybody knows the guy can run. He's one of the best athletes, maybe the best athlete playing the quarterback position in the entire CFL. What you want to see from him at this point, especially as now an entrenched backup, is you want to see him able to run the offense the same way that the starter would. And it's pretty clear, at least from what we saw in the preseason, that he's not yet capable of doing that. There were times last year where he was able to move the ball effectively through the air, but not as consistently, say, as you'd like to see from the starting quarterback. And so I don't think it's unfair to say that he had a poor preseason as far as throwing the ball is concerned. And if he wants to be a starter, whether it's in Winnipeg or elsewhere in 2020, he's going to have to show with his opportunities. And I presume the opportunities will be there for him at some point this season, one way or another. He needs to show that he can not be a one-dimensional quarterback in the sense that he's able to duck and run and produce yardage and not slide and have the huge collision at the end to get the first down. What he needs to do is to play a more disciplined game where when he does take off, he's sliding, not taking collisions, and to begin with, not taking off as often, because at this point, it's almost a bit of a crutch. If the first read isn't there, boom, he's gone because he wants to run. Well, you can't be a starter that way. That's not sustainable over 18 games. It'll get you out of a game, you know, it might work for a week or two, but 18 games worth, no, you're not going to take those hits and stay healthy. That's just not possible. You need to be more comfortable in the pocket. You need to make plays through the air, and that's what we need to see, I think, from Chris Strebler in 2019, whether you're, you know, the Blue Bombers or whether you're another team, because there's going to be a lot of teams, I think, potentially looking for a new starter in 2020, and Strebler would be, you know, a prime candidate should he prove that he's developed his passing game from his rookie season.
Let's talk linebacker for a second here, John. You guys lost Santos Knox at linebacker. Of course, you still have Adam Big Hill, arguably the best linebacker in the league. Who's lining up next to Biggie this year?
Kyrie Wilson will be the starter at weak side linebacker. Wilson was a tackling machine at Fresno State. He spent most of the last 2 seasons on the Bombers PR. When he's gotten into the game, he's averaged a special teams tackle per contest, which is something that a guy like Mike O'Shea, for instance, puts a lot of emphasis on. He wants to see his players succeed on special teams and kind of use that as a reward system to get guys into the starting lineup. Nick Temple will also be getting some time there, I would imagine. He's a guy who was with the Bombers for a season 2 years ago, recently spent some time in the AAF. I personally thought Temple looked really strong in the preseason, but those will be the two. Neither are household names, but they're both going to be looking to pop off the page early. I was surprised, to be quite honest, to see the Bombers keep 2 extra American linebackers on the roster. I thought that spot would be American for sure, but for them to have 2 guys on the end, I believe they'll both be on the active roster on Saturday. You know, I would say Wilson has the job for now, but that's a spot that could easily see a change depending on how those guys perform, not only defensively, but also on special teams.
I'm pretty sure I asked you this last year, but we're nothing if not consistent. So I'm going to ask you a question over again. If the Bombers fail to win the Grey Cup this season, which, of course, I don't think they're gonna, is Mike O'Shea's job in jeopardy this year with anything less than the Grey Cup?
I would certainly be disappointed if it was. You know, I think you know, Mike O'Shea, especially since taking over a pretty down and out franchise in 2014, I think he's done a lot of great work to build a consistent winner. I think he treats his assistant coaches the right way. Mike O'Shea, for instance, vouched to Bomber management when Paul Appelese was denied the opportunity to interview for the head coaching vacancy in Saskatchewan. He was a guy who fought for Appelese to get the opportunity to interview. He was not successful, but he's somebody who treats his assistants and his players the right way. I've yet to meet a player who has a bad word to say about Mike O'Shea. And the fact that this team has achieved double-digit wins in a very, very competitive West Division for the last three seasons in a row, I think speaks volumes. Obviously, and I'm sure Mike O'Shea would be the first to say this, you want to win the Grey Cup, and that's why you play the game. That being said, if Mike O'Shea were to fail this season in winning a Grey Cup, I would be, unless this team completely goes off the rails, if they finish 4-14, sure, make a change. But I don't think that's going to happen. I have this team winning 11 games this season. I have them hosting a playoff game. And I do think, and I do have them going to the Grey Cup. I don't have them winning it, but I have them going there. You know, I would certainly be disheartened if he didn't have the opportunity to come back for 2020. And I'll say this too. I spoke with a member of the media, you know, in November when the Bombers were about to go at a new mosaic for that West semifinal. And he said the Bombers should fire O'Shea and Walters if they don't win today. And I said, excuse me? And he said, yeah, they've had 5 years. They should be winning playoff games by now. And I said, well, who would you hire? And he threw out a name of someone who's never been a GM. And he threw out a head coach who has some head coaching experience but has never won a playoff game himself. And I said, look, you're throwing out a GM who's proven his ability to build winners on a pretty consistent basis for a guy who you hope can be a good GM. You don't know. And you're firing a guy who can't win or potentially won't be able to win a playoff game by year four for a guy who didn't win a playoff game in his first stretch as head coach. So I don't think it makes sense. If John Huffnagel said, hey, I want to be your new head coach, yeah, maybe you consider a change. But I'm sorry. I think, you know, as long as the Bombers play up to the level that I think most people reasonably expect them to play, I think the Bombers would be foolish to make a change there. I think the culture in Winnipeg football wise is strong, and that's what you need your head coach to do is build a strong culture. And I think Mike O'Shea's done that.
You don't think the fact that the Bombers haven't won the Grey Cup in 29 years adds a bit of pressure in that regards? I mean, obviously this fan base is getting kind of antsy. They have to be. I mean, they've got fans that have never seen the Bombers win the Grey Cup. So that's why we asked the question.
And I think the question is appropriate to ask. And there are certainly people who you'll see, whether you talk to them or you see what they post on social media, especially if, let's say, the Bombers start the season 0-2. You know, there'll be people who say, well, are we really sure Mike O'Shea's got the goods? And I guess that's a fair question, especially if the team starts 0-2. But as much as the frustration of that 29-year Grey Cup drought, for the record, I'm 28 years old. The Bombers have not won a Grey Cup in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't hang that on Mike O'Shea. And it's not fair to hang that on Kyle Walters or even Wade Miller, the CEO. They took over the miserable situation in 2013. And I think part of the reason why that situation in 2013 was miserable was that there were too many changes made in Winnipeg in a short period of time. They hired Mike Kelly, who was a disaster in 2009. They hired Paul Appelese in 2010, who did a pretty good job. And Joe Mack fired him halfway through 2012 just to save his own skin, made a change for the sake of making a change. And Tim Burke was a disaster getting them out of that season and into 2013. The fact that they have some continuity now is I think, a huge asset for the team. Because I'll say this, even if the Bombers don't win a Grey Cup in 2019, I think if they keep the same front office staff and they manage to keep their coaching staff together, I think they'll win one certainly by 2022, simply because the stars have to align at some point. If you have a good team and you keep it together and you have enough cracks, you're going to break through. And so to anybody, be a Bomber fan or otherwise, who asks for change if, let's say, this team goes 12-6 but loses a tight West final. Like, I'm sorry, if beating Calgary in the West final of McMahon Stadium is what it takes to not get fired, then by that logic, most coaches should be fired every year, because it's a tall order, that's for sure.
The Bombers released national receiver Rashawn Semenes with their final cuts. He was quickly snapped up by his hometown BC Lions. This is a guy who has a ton of upside, but also struggled to get playing time. He's gone through a bit of a rocky road in his football journey. What type of player are the Lions getting, and do you think, given the chance to play, he can have an impact in the CFL?
I mean, physically, the guy is a specimen. He's a bit of a string bean, but he's 6'4", and he can run, and he can jump like no tomorrow, and he can high point the football. He had a 50-yard reception, for instance, last year, working against Tommy Campbell, second week of the season in Montreal, that I'll never forget because it was a beautiful play, and it was one that made you say, wow, like, this is a guy who, if he can develop, say, the mental side of his game, he's going to be one to keep, that's for sure. That being said, later in the season, Weston Dressler got hurt. He came into a game, didn't know his spots, which put him in the doghouse with the coaching staff. And I think with Daniel Peterman just being, you know, as the third Canadian receiver, the backup for Wolitarski and Dembski, just being a guy who's produced every opportunity he's gotten, that led the club to ask Simon Ise to take a PR spot. And when he said no, they cut him outright. It's unfortunate, obviously, when a team cuts a former second-round pick that quickly, but the Bombers weren't in a position to keep four Canadian receivers on the active roster, and Simon Ise wasn't going to play special teams. And so I think the BC Lions got a good grab, especially when you can get a young Canadian player for free. It's not a trade. You just pick him up as a free agent. But he's going to be a guy who needs to be coached and is going to need to maybe invest more to the mental side of his game. Because as I said, you know, there was a particular game in Winnipeg. I forget the week, but Simon Ise was the first guy in for Dressler. And by the fourth quarter, he was out. And I did some poking around and somebody said, yeah, he didn't know his spots. He ran some wrong routes and he got out of the game real quick. And so he's a guy who's going to have to maybe put in a little more time doing his homework.
Well, we'll see how he does tomorrow because he's on the 46. So it's rumored the Bombers were also looking at adding recently released Anthony Coombs, formerly of the Argos. Is there any update on whether they're going to pursue that? I would imagine they might be using him as a backup to Andrew Harris if it comes to fruition.
Yeah, when Coombs first got released, I did some poking around, and word seemed to be that the club was not interested in bringing him in simply because they had so many guys who could fill those roles. They've got Andrew Harris, of course, starting, but they drafted Winnipeg running back Brady Oliveira out of North Dakota this year in the second round. They've still got Johnny Augustine kicking around at a Guelph at the running back spot. Nick Dembski, of course, takes some work there. And then among the other receivers, Drew Lutarski is a guy who I think needs more playing time. Daniel Peterman's a guy who I think needs more playing time. And Simon Ise was still in the fold at that point. I think the release of Simon Ise maybe gives you an opportunity to suddenly bring in a guy like Coombs. I think the fact that he sat for a week now as a free agent cut by the Argos probably helps the Bombers, because the Bombers aren't going to be a team with a lot of money to play with at this point of the season. With things getting underway, their roster is pretty set. So a week ago, I would say odds are slim. At this point, I wouldn't say it's a sure thing, but I would be much less surprised to see the Bombers add a guy like Coombs, simply because, first off, there's a roster spot, and secondly, with nobody else, you know, the day after he's cut, giving Coombs a big fat check, which is what we saw, for instance, when the Argos cut Chris Van Zyl. He signed literally hours later for a big money deal with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think all of a sudden you say, okay, maybe there's a match to be made here between the Bombers and a guy like Anthony Coombs, because as you mentioned with Simon Ise down in BC, there's a roster spot and the money might be a little bit easier to work out for both sides.
Hey, John, you also cover the CFL topics for 3downnation.com, so we wanted to get your opinion on the news yesterday that Jonathan Rose of the Red Blacks won't be suspended by the league for contacting an official in last year's Eastern Division Final, but will instead only have to surrender half a game check. personally, I like Randy Ambrosi, but did the CFL fail its officials here, and does it set a precedent for the next time this happens?
I mean, the supplementary discipline has been a joke in the CFL for a while now. They can't suspend their players, it seems. And, I mean, I don't think it's over the top to suggest that when a guy like Jonathan Rose can go unsuspended for putting his hands on an official, it almost declares open season. Hey, you don't like a call? Well, hey, guess what? It doesn't matter that you've got 60 pounds on the official who's not wearing any equipment. You can take it out on them, and it'll only cost you, you know, half your game check. You won't miss any playing time. You won't hurt your team. It to me is disgusting. And I understand that the issue is convoluted by the fact that there was no CBA agreed upon into May of this year. And this issue seemed to, you know, go by the wayside a little bit as those things got figured out on a, you know, a larger scope between the league and the CFLPA. But it's disgusting to me that a player can do that and not be suspended. That's something that should be mandatory. If you put your hands on an official, you miss a game. And if you do it again, maybe you miss three. And if you do it again, maybe you shouldn't be a professional football player. That might be a bit hyperbolic, but I would certainly rather live in a world where that's how supplementary discipline was handled in the CFL rather than, oh, right, there was that suspension that we were unable to enforce in the playoffs. Oh, well, I guess let's just turn that into a fine because it's not enough. And if I was a CFL official, I would feel disrespected by that because if we can't ensure the safety of our officials, how can we expect them to go out and do a good job? And Lord knows that CFL officials, you know, when they make a mistake, nobody's afraid to point that out and drag their name through the mud. So, you know, if you want officials to be the best that they can be, you need to guarantee them a safe place to work. That goes for anybody in any profession. And that starts with, you know, not letting, you know, professional athletes manhandle them on the field. I think that goes without saying.
You don't even get away with that stuff in the WWE.
No, nor should you. It's ridiculous.
That brings us to another area of discipline that could be coming up, and I hope it does. I want to get your opinion on the Zach Caleros hit last night, John. Just on his third play, he takes a hit from Simone Lawrence well into his slide and appears to have suffered another concussion. Surely if the league is serious about player safety, Lawrence has to have a suspension coming.
It has to be. And it's disgusting to me that Simone wasn't ejected from the game.
Yeah.
It's one thing to take a lick on a quarterback who's dropped back to pass and, you know, the hit looks clean, but then you slow it down super, super, super slow motion. And it's like, oh, you know, if you look at it from one of eight camera angles, it looks like the shoulder pad may have gotten a little bit too high. You know, ooh, that's a close call. It's quite another for a quarterback to give themselves up and someone to bear down on them anyways and smash him in the head. It's an inexcusable play. And I give Simone Lawrence a shred of credit for speaking with Matthew Schenetti after the game on TSN and saying, look, I regret it. I'm horrified. And I'm paraphrasing here, of course, but saying essentially, you know, I'm horrified that this occurred. I'm deeply sorry. I'm not a dirty player. I never meant to hurt Zach Caleros, who, you know, is a former teammate of mine. But his account of what occurred where, you know, oh, I wasn't able to jump out of the way and, you know, oh, I was going in for attack. I'm sorry. If you look at the video, it does not line up whatsoever. And I give Mike Riley, for instance, credit for speaking out on that issue today. I think that's something that players need to do is police hits like this, because it's one thing for the league to try to suspend a player and the PA say, nope, you're not going to do that. We're going to appeal. It's quite another when other players like a Mike Riley, who has a strong voice in that union, who is a very well-respected player, a former MOP, to then say, that's crap, get it out of the game. Because if a guy like Simone is able to make a hit like that and the other players don't talk about it like it's a problem, don't call him out on it, you're more likely to see another one. because it was a remarkably easy play to avoid. That's the end of it. And a guy who's played professional football for whatever it is 8 years now, like Simone, should know better. And there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. A guy like Zach Caleros, you know, his season could be over now. That's an injury that could affect him the rest of his life. Yep. And I don't buy it for a split second that you couldn't jump that high. Even I can jump higher than 6 inches, Simone, and I'm not a professional athlete. So, you know, get your head out of your, you know where. It was a garbage apology.
Well, and he's done stuff like this before as well. So
exactly, not a first time.
Hopefully,
not a first time.
Hopefully, the league can come down on him pretty hard.
Hey, John,
as they should.
What do you think the CFLPA has to do about this? I mean, they're gonna protect Simone Lawrence if the league tries to suspend him.
And yes, that is their role as a union. But to me, I don't get me wrong, I don't fault the CFLPA for doing their jobs, essentially, and trying to protect players from being suspended. But to me, it's up to players who have leadership roles, be they a Mike Riley, be they a Bo Levi Mitchell or an Adam Big Hill, to speak up on issues like this and say, hey, we are all members of this league and we are all people who you know, are concerned about our long-term health as professional athletes. Get this stuff out of the game. I think there's a lot of power in that, because if players aren't willing to police it to an extent, it's going to keep happening. And I would love players to take on a more active role, for example, in the PA and say, hey, maybe we don't appeal. Because hey, it was a brutal hit. It was illegal. And Simone, as much as he tried to explain, you know, why it happened, you know, he didn't pretend that it wasn't a devastating hit. So I get it if the PA appeals, but I really like hearing players step up and say, look, that hit was garbage. And Simone was in the wrong for doing it, because I think that those voices need to be heard. I think that's important.
I think at some point the vision has to change from protecting the offender to protecting the guy that got hit. You know, your union should have a responsibility to protect the guy that got hit as well as the player who's getting suspended. So, John, as we speak, the Eskimos have taken are losing to the Red Blacks 7-2. So a good result for both our teams. What's your prediction for the game this week?
Game this week, I did pick the Bombers in my 3-down picks, but I would say that was the game I agonized over the most. I took the Ticats pretty quickly against the Riders on the Thursday night opener. I laughed as I chose the Eskimos tonight over the Alouettes, less than a week away from or removed from firing their coach. And it was pretty easy to take Calgary at home tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll take Calgary at home regardless of who they play. They happen to play Ottawa tomorrow. That's fine. But the Lions-Bombers game is the one that I think is going to be closest. The only reason I took Winnipeg is I just think their continuity from last year is going to be an asset. I think BC is going to be, as long as they don't get hurt, because their depth is not great looking at their roster in some places. For example, if Odell Willis goes down, I think they're going to have a hard time getting after the passer. If a guy like Jerron Carter goes down, I think they might be a little thin in the receiving core. If a guy like TJ Lee goes down, I think the secondary is going to look awful young. But if they stay healthy and their pieces gel, and I suspect they will, I think they're going to be a very fine team late in the year. I have them winning 11 games just like the Bombers. But that was, to me, the tiebreaker is, okay, I think the Bombers have – with the same coordinators for the past 4 years now, and a lot of the same pieces in place. That was my logic behind that pick, is I just think they're going to be they're going to be a little bit ahead of where the Lions are now. The trick will be, can the Bombers stay ahead of where the Lions are going to be in November? Because by then the team out in BC, I think, is going to be, as long as they're healthy, I think they'll be firing all cylinders. That's for sure.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree with that. John, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on to talk Bombers with us tonight. Before we say goodbye, let our listeners know where they can find you online.
threenownnation.com. That's where all of my writing is. Depending on the week, I pump out between one and probably five things for the site. That's where the podcast is, Blue Bomber Talk Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at John D. Hodge. Thanks for having me, boys. Always a pleasure.
Good stuff, John. Always great to have CFL football back. Enjoy the game this weekend, and we'll chat with you down the road.
Will do. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks, John.
Mojo, it's here, man. A new season. I'm really excited to see this Lions team debut on Saturday and see how this new era of Lions football unfolds this year. Have you made your CFL pick'em and fantasy selections yet? And what's your prediction for the game this weekend?
I have made my CFL pick'em predictions, Brian, but unlike last year, I'm not letting them out. Because obviously everybody goes to town on my picks, and I can't get ahead if everyone's picking the same as me. I can tell you, though, that I already forgot about yesterday's game. So I'm probably already behind you. And I cannot do fantasy. I cannot do fantasy because I just pick BC Lions. And that's what I do. So this year I'm not going to go into the fantasy. But I do find the pick'ems pretty fun. I think folks will remember, if you can remember the last time I was on the show, I predicted the Lions would go 16-0, even though there's 18 games in a regular season. I think the Lions are going to win, man. I'm going to just always go with I think the Lions are going to win until we have injuries to deal with. As long as Mike Riley's running the show, I think we're always going to have a chance to win. I can't wait to see Daron Carter and Brian Burnham on the same team. I think we have the best aerial attack in the league. It's going to all come down to, can the defense stop the other team?
Yeah, that's where my concern lies, is the defense. But I have a good feeling about tomorrow night, and I think I'm going to go with the Lions as well. I did take them and pick them. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a fairly high-scoring game. But we're going to see what happens. I mean, this is a good Bombers team coming in on Saturday. And like we said, this is a pretty critical game for the BC Lions just to get off on the right foot here and get the fans interested in coming back to BC Place. And I think they're going to put their best foot forward. And we're going to see a good performance tomorrow night. So that's it for episode 133. I want to thank John Hodge of Three Down Nation and Blue Bomber Talk Podcast for coming on the show with us tonight. Thanks to our sponsor, Metal Rocks. Make sure to check out what they have to offer in the way of custom jewelry at https://etsy.com/ca/shop/Metal Rocks. This show is part of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. Make sure to check out all the great shows that are part of it at cfpodnetwork.ca. Please subscribe and listen to the show or on your favorite podcast app. Visit us at bclionsden.ca. Follow us on Twitter at bclionsden and at Mojo Camp, and on Instagram at bclionsden_podcast. That's podcast, PAWDCAST. Football is back this Saturday. Get out to the stadium, folks, and get there early to get yourself a Mike Riley bobblehead. It's time for this city to get on board with this team and make BC Place a very tough place to play again. Ed Hervey and the Lions are trying to do their part. It's time for us to do ours. Until next week, on behalf of Mojo Kemp and myself, enjoy the game this weekend, and as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.